This week's episode is presented by Our Crowd. Our Crowd gives accredited investors access to invest directly, easily, and early on some of the best performing IPOs. We'll tell you more about them and their latest offering in a new software startup during the break. Or if you want to learn more now, you can head over to ourcrowd.com/boss.
That's ourcrowd.com/boss. Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
Hey bosses, this is Johnny and welcome to episode 153 of the Invest Like a Boss podcast. I'm out here in Trincomalee, East Coast, Sri Lanka, and Sam is in the closet of his condo. Welcome to the show.
Not the closet, but not far from it. You're having trouble saying Sri Lanka after being there for 7 months. What's happening?
Oh my God. Stuttering a bit. I know. I have no idea what I am. I've actually been in this same hotel for the last week, and I've eaten every meal here. I haven't left this place because I've just been editing and doing work, and I feel like I'm under quarantine again.
Oh, well, welcome to my life, buddy. Yeah. At least you've had a beach for the last 6 months. I've been bouncing from my basement to my parents' basement to my shitty apartment in quarantined Charlotte, a state of constant misery.
Oh my God.
So ready for this to be over with. God.
Yeah. You know, Bill Perkins would not approve.
Yeah. Bill Perkins wouldn't approve from his yacht off Capri right now.
Speaking of which, I just got off my yacht here in Trincomalee. And that's very nice.
I'll have to take a look at that. I'm suspecting it's not as nice of a yacht as Bill Perkins' yacht.
You know what? I don't know how big his was, but this one was 84 feet. And I had to look it up to see if it qualified. But it is officially a super yacht. And it's brand new. It's beautiful. Yeah,
it's brand new?
All right. Brand new.
I was thinking it was like a 1962 like wooden boat.
No.
This called a yacht.
Brand new, built like back in 5 months ago, and built here in Sri Lanka actually, but like really, really well made. Like I would say,
made if anyone, out of bamboo.
No, it's amazing. It's like I haven't been on that many super yachts or yachts in general, but I would say the quality of craftsmanship is like surprisingly good. I would have just assumed it was built in Europe or something.
Interesting. Thanks for sharing that, Johnny. It just makes me feel a little bit worse about my day here in Charlotte.
Yeah, you're absolutely welcome, my friend. Well, maybe if you had some of these 18% MLPs, you would not be so worried about saving money and staying with five people in a small condo.
Yeah. And I would be adding to the MLP share value by renting the yacht because I would be burning oil and thus increasing demand on oil in my small part.
Yeah, exactly. So for those who don't know what an MLP is, I actually had never heard of it until Bill Perkins kind of just casually mentioned it at the end of the episode. But Sam, turns out you have actually invested in MLPs in the past.
Back in the day, yeah. UBS in my managed account, they put me in these MLPs before I knew what an MLP was for the tax efficiency. I think that's probably better content for the outro because I do have a story about that. But that was the first time I heard about them. And then when I folded my UBS account, had not heard of MLPs basically since or even thought about them until the Bill Perkins episode. So it is a kind of a complicated asset class in a sense. Mm-hmm. So it's good that we brought it up because there is some great advantages and some definite benefits to them. Especially on the tax efficiency side and dividends. So good job to Derek for setting up this episode. It's with Stacy Morris from Alerian, and they really specialize in MLPs, specifically in the energy sector.
Yeah. So big thank you to all the Patreons who paid Derek's salary. If it wasn't for him, if it wasn't for you Patreons, we wouldn't have Derek and we wouldn't have gotten Stacy on this episode and we wouldn't have had this episode at all. So thank you for supporting. And if you guys want to to sign up as a Patreon and get these episodes early, as well as help support the show and get some perks, go to investlikeaboss.com, click on support the show. But yeah, let's hear from Stacy and let's talk about your MLP story at the outro. I think a lot of people are going to be excited to hear about that.
Do you wish that you were in early on some of the best performing IPOs of 2019 and 2020? Our crowd investors were, and now you can join them in what's next. With Our Crowd, accredited investors have early access to invest directly, easily, and most importantly, early. Our crowd investors have benefited from some Our Crowd companies IPOing like Beyond Meat or being bought by companies like Intel, Nike, Microsoft, and Oracle. Today, you can join OurCrowd's investments in TechSee, a software startup that has used patented technology to help technicians and customer service teams see what the customer sees without ever stepping inside their home or office. It's safe, easy, and already revolutionizing. Companies like Vodafone, Verizon, and Samsung support their customers. If you're interested in investing, you'll need to join OurCrowd. Learn more about getting in early on TechSee and other unique opportunities at OurCrowd.com/boss. Set up your OurCrowd account is free. And that's OurCrowd.com/boss.
And welcome back, Stacy. It is great to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Sam. It's great to be here. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. It's a new topic for us, MLPs. And we first heard about this term, I guess, on this show. We had a gentleman by the name of Bill Perkins on, who's kind of a hedge fund manager and now a globetrotter, runs around with this guy, Dan Bilzerian, and hangs out on yachts all day. But he was talking on that episode how he's a big investor in energy and MLPs. And so that intrigued a lot of listeners' interest. There's a lot of chat going on in some of the forum groups that we have. And so we decided we needed to touch on the subject. So we're glad to have you on the show.
Yeah, no, it's great to be here. It's a really interesting space, so I'm excited to get to share it with your audience.
Yeah, great. Well, Stacy, it'd be helpful maybe just at the forefront of this episode just to hear a little bit about the company you're with, Alerian. I know you have a really interesting background with MLPs and energy as a whole, so if you could touch on that too, that'd be really helpful.
Yeah, sure. So Alerian actually started in 2004 as an asset manager focused on the MLP space. And quickly realized that there wasn't really any benchmark to judge performance by. So it's hard to prove your value as an asset manager if you don't have a benchmark there to mark yourself against. So in 2006, Alerian launched the first MLP index, first of its kind, really, you know, was a game changer for this space. And then subsequent to that, launched the first exchange-traded note with a partner, and then also was involved in the launch of the first MLP ETF, the Alerian MLP ETF, AMLP, which just celebrated its 10-year anniversary. So over time, you know, the asset management arm split off. Today, we're solely focused on being an index provider. We've expanded our capabilities, you know, beyond the MLP and energy infrastructure space, but that's still, you know, core area for us and certainly the focus of my research team. In terms of my background, I was lucky to land a job in Houston out of college covering energy stocks. I spent 3 years on the sell side covering energy companies and then moved on to do investor relations for an oil refiner, which also had a variable distribution MLP. And I did that for 4 years. That company ultimately got acquired and I was a synergy. So from there, I started at Alerian and I've been with Alerian for about 3 years now. And I've been heading up our research effort for about 2 years.
Stacy, were you always interested in energy growing up or did you just happen to fall into that after school?
I happened to fall into it. So I didn't know a lick about energy when I started back in 2010. And I was interviewing at the time for equity research roles in energy and then in more banking and financial stocks and just happened to click with the Houston team and ended up in energy. So it was more just the luck of the draw.
Right. So when was the first time you heard about the term MLPs? It's, I guess now we can disclose what it actually means, Master Limited Partnership, which I'm still confused about, but when's the first time you heard that term?
Yeah, so around 2010 when I started working in energy, covering energy stocks. So master lender partnership is not something that a lot of people are familiar with. And in fact, if you Google MLP, the first thing that comes up is My Little Pony. So, you know, a term that a lot of people aren't familiar with, but it's really interesting from an investing perspective. So I'm excited to talk about it with you today.
Yeah. So I guess starting off, do you know actually where the master part of the MLP came from, like how that term was ever even created or why it was created like that?
Yeah, it's a good question and a unique question. But if you go back to 1981, when the first MLP, Master Limited Partnership, was formed, Apache Corporation created Apache Petroleum Company, basically aggregating 33 different oil and gas partnerships into one. And so I think that's where the branding of Master Limited Partnership really came from, because you were taking separate companies and putting them all under one umbrella.
Got it.
That's the backstory there.
Got it. Well, I guess we can go into what an actual MLP is. I read that it's not specific just to energy, which I thought it was. It says that they can also be used for real estate, but I'll let you kind of go into a little bit of a description of what an MLP is.
Yeah, so an MLP in its simplest form is a company with an advantageous tax structure that's essentially a pass-through. Mm-hmm. Predominantly, it's focused on the energy space. Back in the 80s, there were a wide variety of MLPs. The Boston Celtics were an MLP at one point. Wow. But back in 1986 and 1987, legislation was passed that really defined the modern MLP that we know today. And essentially, to be an MLP, you have to earn 90% of your gross income from qualifying sources. And those are essentially transportation, processing, storage, and production of natural resources and minerals. So there are still some MLPs today that are not energy related. For example, there's an amusement park MLP, but we primarily focus on energy infrastructure MLPs and midstream MLPs, those companies that are really performing the shipping and handling part of the energy value chain. So over time, the scope of MLPs has gone from quite broad, you know, to right. include the Boston Celtics and things like macadamia farms and even funeral and burial services, to now, you know, being more focused on the energy space overall. So an MLP is a pass-through, and that just means that it doesn't pay tax at the entity level. The investors in an MLP, which are called unit holders, essentially receive the items of an MLP's income statement on a tax form called a K-1, and they mm-hmm. file their taxes that way. And so there's not taxation at the entity level.
Got it. Do MLPs, are they required to, so they have to generate 90% of their income from qualified sources. Do they also have restrictions or regulations to force them to distribute a certain amount of their profits? I think that's the common structure in like a REIT or real estate investment trust.
Yeah, so there isn't that requirement for MLPs. Some MLPs will have minimum quarterly distributions that are laid out in their prospectus and the documents that are filed when companies go public. But there isn't some rule where MLPs have to pay out a certain amount of their cash flow as distributions. And in fact, in the past, there were variable distribution MLPs, and they would essentially pay out the cash that they made each quarter. So there could be quarters where there was no distribution. Typically, you know, the variable distribution MLP model has kind of fallen by the wayside. There's not, you know, I don't think any more examples of that currently today. But overall, from an MLP perspective, there isn't, you know, a rule about paying out a certain amount aside from maybe what's included in the prospectus from when the MLP initially went public.
Got it. So I assume this is a correct statement, but it could be wrong, that not all energy companies are necessarily MLPs just because they're an energy company, correct? There are energy companies that are organized and structured differently.
That's right. Not every energy company is an MLP. And it comes down to, again, you know, transporting, storing, and producing energy. So there are companies, a lot of companies that produce energy, but they're not structured as MLPs. Typically, MLPs are pipeline companies that are storing hydrocarbons, companies that are processing natural gas and natural gas liquids in usable form. So the natural gas that comes out of a well isn't, you know, immediately ready to power your stove. It has to be processed in order for it to be usable. So these companies do that activity as well. So for example, like an energy company, like an Exxon or Chevron, you know, those are not MLPs, those are corporations.
Got it.
So it's not, you know, an umbrella structure for the energy space.
Right. Now, why would one of these companies choose an MLP structure? Is it strictly to attract investment because of the tax efficiencies from outside investors, or are there other benefits that maybe the founders or the general partners of these companies would have by designating an MLP as a corporate structure?
Sure. So the primary benefit is the tax advantages. And that's really what's been, you know, attractive about the MLP model over time. It's the most tax efficient way to own these types of assets. If you go back historically, the MLP model has been very focused on paying out income and paying out distributions. So for that reason, an energy producer is not as good of a fit for the MLP structure because they're more sensitive to what happens with commodity prices. Midstream has really been kind of the sweet spot for the MLP structure because their cash flows are largely fee-based. Mm-hmm. So they're collecting a fee for each barrel of crude or collecting a fee for each barrel of crude that they're moving. They're collecting rent for leasing space in a storage tank. They're receiving fees for processing natural gas. So the fee-based nature of midstream has really lended itself better to the MLP structure because those stable cash flows can support more stable payouts.
Okay, got it. Well, I kind of get the tax advantages, but it's a little bit complicated, right? So I know the first time I heard about MLPs outside of this show was I used to have an account managed by UBS, and they put some of my funds into MLPs. And I was like, what's an MLP? And they're like, oh, it's an energy company that's really tax efficient. But I don't know how tax efficient that was. Do you have any, like, is there a hypothetical example or, you know, anything that you could just make it, simplify it for the listener to say, okay, if I invested 100,000 into MLP and it's distributing 8% a year, and kind of a general understanding of how much of that 8% might be exempt from tax or how much efficiencies would be in that income stream?
Sure. So the primary benefit of MLPs is the potential for tax deferred income. So typically for an MLP, 70 to 100% of the distribution that's paid out, and distribution is just the MLP word for dividend, but 70 to 100% of the distribution that you receive is considered a tax deferred return of capital. So you don't have to pay taxes on that portion until you go to sell your units. So that's really, you know, what the tax advantage is. To make a comparison, if you owned a C corporation, the corporation is going to pay taxes at the entity level. And then if you get a dollar dividend, you're going to be paying, you know, 20% qualified dividend rate on that dividend that you receive. Mm-hmm. So you get a dollar dividend, you're paying 20 cents in taxes, and by the way, the corporation has already paid you taxes as well. Mm. From an MLP perspective, if you invest in an MLP and let's say for this example, that 100% of the distribution is a return of capital, then you won't pay taxes on that 100% distribution, you won't pay taxes on that distribution until you go to sell your units.
Got it.
If you have a portion of the distribution that's taxable, or really the way to think about it is if you have a distribution and it's 80% return of capital, for example, then you would pay taxes on that 20% in the current year, but the rest of it would be tax deferred. So that's really kind of the key attraction to the MLP space and the key tax advantage. And it's probably not as maybe relevant to your listeners, but it's also an efficient tool from an estate planning perspective. Mm-hmm. If you own an MLP and you receive tax deferred distributions and then pass away while owning it, your basis gets stepped up for the heirs. So essentially you would never have to pay taxes on those tax deferred distributions that you received as long as your basis in the units was above zero. So it can also be a very interesting estate planning tool as well.
That makes a lot of sense. So that kind of led into my next question was, if you get the tax deferred income, but it's deferred until you sell your units, does that tax obligation accumulate? And then when you sell your units, you have a much larger tax obligation than you would say on a typical, you know, index fund or something where you're paying on the capital gains, but there's no other accumulation of taxes that you would owe when you sold that fund or that stock.
Right. So if you go to sell, you know, an individual MLP investment, essentially what that's referred to is basis recapture. So the distributions that you receive over time lower your basis in the units. And then when you go to sell those units, you pay taxes on that change in basis. So for example, if I bought an MLP at $10 and I received $2 in distributions, my basis would go down to $8 and I would pay ordinary income rates when I sell the units on that $2 difference. But then there's also a qualified business income deduction. So there's a 20% deduction there that you get a benefit from as well. But that's simply how the tax would work. And then if you had a capital gain there because you bought it at $10, but sold it at $12, that other $2 gain would be taxed at capital gain rates.
Got it. So it almost seems like it works similar in the way that depreciation works on real estate and some real estate funds, where you can depreciate each year, so your income distributions are tax efficient, or in many cases tax free or tax deferred, I guess you could call it, be better. But then when you go to sell the property down the road, you have a much larger gain because you're depreciating the tax, you're depreciating the property along the way.
Right. It's similar to that. And so the reason that a significant portion of MLP's distributions are tax deferred return of capital is because there is significant depreciation. Mm. So it's very similar to what you're describing.
Cool. So it seems like the appropriate way to invest in MLPs would be, you want to do it. Okay. You're doing it basically for the tax-free income. So it'd be reasonable to expect that if you invested, say, $100,000 into an MLP or MLP fund, you could generate, you know, an 8% return somewhere in there, just using numbers, for example. So you could get an $8,000 a year distribution, and 70 to 100% of that could be tax deferred. So if you held the MLP long enough, you could generate basically tax-free income or tax deferred income for a very long time. And then at some point, if you left that to your heirs, then you could have a good chance of basically leaving that tax-free to your heirs.
Right. So the only kind of nuance to keep in mind is that if your basis in the units goes to zero, then you start paying capital gains taxes on the distributions that you receive.
Okay. So you would have to hold it for a long time.
So if you own it for a very long time, yeah, your basis went down over time, then that could be an issue. But otherwise, your example is accurate.
Interesting. So the way not to invest in these would be to invest for like a year or two. I mean, it just wouldn't make as much sense to invest in an MLP if that was your plan, correct?
Right. I mean, you don't really get to enjoy those full benefits if you're trading in and out, especially if you from an estate planning perspective. If that's the angle you're taking, then you definitely would be more interested in kind of buying and holding and just enjoying that income through retirement. But you do see people trade in and out to some extent, but again, it's maybe not really maximizing those tax benefits.
Yeah, that was me. Invested for 2 years and then I folded my account and got out of everything, but I didn't know I was doing so. Interesting. So I want to talk a little bit about, you know, just what's in an MLP. We know the type of companies. They're obviously in energy and the different types of companies that can be structured as an MLP. You know, what are the main — energy is such a confusing asset class for me. There's just so many dynamics with something like oil that I feel like you really need to be niche to understand everything and make a sound investment in it or with confidence. But what are some of the you know, what are some of the variables that would move the price of an MLP? Like, I know Alerian's got a fund. You mentioned it, MLP, right? AMZ.
So AMZ is the index. We have different products that track our indices. So the ETF that I referenced was AMLP, and that AMLP tracks our AMZI index.
So what were some of the factors that would affect share price on that index or on any MLP stock that you could own?
Sure. So, you know, especially this year, oil volatility and just selling pressure have really driven the equities. And that's been kind of front and center for the MLP and midstream space, even though these companies are more fee-based. So because of the nature of their business and the fact that they're really just collecting fees, these companies shouldn't be as sensitive to what happens with oil and natural gas prices. But what we've seen is that oil volatility can drive sentiment in the space. And for energy broadly, you know, it's no secret that sentiment has been weak for some time. And so even though the space is differentiated in terms of how it makes money, and its commodity price exposure, it's still been, you know, sold off with broader energy in light of what we've seen with oil prices and the demand impacts from COVID-19. To give an example, if you look at EBITDA estimates for our MLP index before COVID-19 for 2020 and 2021, and then look at where they are today, they're only down about 10, 13%. If you look at broader energy, those estimates are down, you know, 40 to 50%. If you look at exploration and production companies, which produce oil and gas, you know, their 2020 and 2021 EBITDA estimates are down, you know, 60%. But if you then go look at stock performance, you know, the MLP space is down, you know, 30%, 40%, despite the fact that their estimates have been pretty resilient. So unfortunately, in terms of what drives you MLPs, it's really lately been more around sentiment for energy and sentiment for oil prices, even though these companies are in a much different position than their peers that are more sensitive to the commodity price.
Got it. Yeah. So it really kind of comes down to demand for oil and price for oil would be, and anything around that is going to be the biggest movers of these funds.
Yeah. So midstream and MLPs don't have as much oil exposure as producers or oil field service names. But, you know, if you look at recent performance, it's tended to be impacted by oil price volatility. In theory, you know, what should matter more for the space is production growth from the U.S., what we're seeing in terms of growing volumes and opportunities around that. But in general, lately, it's been more about what's happened with oil prices. And I think that's been true of energy in general, where there's been, you know, more focus on oil and just kind of weak sentiment overall. And that's really you know, distorted performance compared to maybe what the fundamental outlook looks like if you look at things like forward EBITDA estimates.
All right. Curious to know, what are some of the big MLP names out there, or the big companies? Like, are there any household ones that that listeners and myself might know of, or are they kind of these more niche companies that are a little bit off the radar?
Sure. So if you don't know the MLPs themselves, you probably are, you're familiar with their customers and, you know, at least see kind of the fruits of their labor in your day-to-day life. You know, when you go fill up your tank at a gas station, or you turn on your stove for natural gas. I mean, an MLP has probably facilitated that, or some other midstream company. There are, you know, midstream corporations as well, but the household MLP names that people may be familiar with are names like Enterprise Products Partners, ticker EPD, Magellan Midstream Partners, ticker MMP, Energy Transfer for ticker ET. And then there are also two large MLPs that are associated with refiners that people may be more familiar with. MPLX is the MLP related to the refiner Marathon Petroleum Corporation. And then Phillips 66 Partners is the MLP related to the refiner Phillips 66. So these are maybe some names that ring bells. They may be, you know, not as familiar, but certainly the activities that MLPs are providing and the services they provide are things that you are more familiar to everyone's everyday lives.
Right. Yeah. So, Stacey, I guess what are the easiest ways for a retail investor to invest in MLPs? You guys have your index fund. I guess you could invest directly into those companies as well. Are there any other primary ways to get involved in MLPs?
Sure. So, you know, the kind of most straightforward option, I guess, would be to directly invest in an MLP. Mm-hmm. The issue, though, there that people sometimes have is that you get a K-1 each spring for taxes. And some people hate them. Some people don't mind them. It really just probably depends on who's doing your taxes or how much they charge to handle the K-1s. But if you don't want to have a K-1 at tax time, or if you prefer to have diversified exposure, there are a number of different products that you can use to invest in this space. As you mentioned, there's a number of exchange-traded notes that are tied to our indexes. There's exchange-traded funds tied to our indexes. And you can see the full list of product options on Alerian.com if you're looking at kind of the passive options in this space. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, similar to just general MLP investing, there are nuances with investing in MLP products. The products themselves issue 1099, so that's, you know, a convenience thing. But beyond that, picking the best product for your situation just depends on the type of account you're investing in and what you're trying to get out of the investment. So, for example, if you're primarily trying to get tax advantage income, then you're going to be more interested in an MLP product that is predominantly MLPs, so 90%, 100% MLPs. An ETF is going to maintain the tax advantages of its underlying holdings. So a good portion of the income from an MLP ETF is going to have that tax-deferred return of capital aspect to it. And that's typically going to be, you know, make more sense for a taxable account. If you have a tax-advantaged investment in a tax-advantaged account, it's a little bit like a belt and suspender situation. So that's the route you probably want to go if you're looking at wanting to maximize tax advantage income, not receive a K-1, and have diversified exposure in one product. If you're more interested in total return, you're probably going to be more interested in what's called a RIC compliant product, which is 25% MLPs and 75% something else. You have to kind of watch what that other 75% is and make sure it's giving you the exposure you want. But the benefit there is that you don't have tax drag. If you have more than 25% MLPs in a fund, then the fund is going to be taxed as a corporation. So you don't get one-for-one tracking on the index in a fund that has predominantly MLPs, or one-for-one tracking of the underlying holdings. So RIC compliant product gives you more total return exposure. You don't have tax drag. But it's also going to have a lower yield. And because MLPs are capped at 25%, it's not going to have as much tax-deferred return of capital income. Right. The other way you can look at, you know, investing in the space is through an exchange-traded note, which is, you know, a credit obligation of the issuer that essentially guarantees the return on an index. An ETN is going to make more sense if you're investing in a tax advantage account, because coupons are going to be taxed at ordinary income rates. So if you're looking to invest in this space and you have a tax advantaged account, then an ETN may be the better fit for you. So there's a lot of nuances to investing in the MLP space, whether you're doing it directly through an MLP or through MLP products. If anyone's interested in more information, I'd highly recommend our website, Alerian.com. We have a primer that goes through MLP investing. We have several research pieces around trying to pick the best product for your situation. And I think it would be, you know, a helpful resource for people who are trying to kind of differentiate between the different options.
Yeah, that's great. That's a really good overview. I'd never heard of an ETN before. I'm going to have to check into that. But, I know for myself, and at least for Johnny, our co-host, the ETF that tracks the index definitely seems to make the most sense without the K-1 diversification, because we know nothing about energy for the most part. And to go into the yield, the yields of the MLPs look quite attractive. I think some of the index products that we were looking at, the yield is somewhere in the kind of 8 to 9% currently. Again, we had when we had Bill Perkins on, he was talking about the MLP he's invested in that just reconfirmed their dividend of 18%. I'm not sure what company that is, but are yields that high common and typical historically with MLPs, or is that just given the kind of reduced share price environment that we're in right now?
Yeah, so historically yields are not typically that high. Yields today are around those levels. For our MLP index, it's yielding, I think, just over 12% currently. If you go back to your 2014, yields were around 5%, maybe even lower for some of your higher quality names. So an 18% yield or a 12% yield is not normal. It's really reflective of the weak equity performance that we've seen this year. From a yield perspective, you know, bears mentioning that there were some MLPs that cut their distributions over the last several years. And then when we had the volatility of the first quarter and a lot of uncertainty, there were additional MLPs that cut their distributions. Most of the larger MLPs maintained their payouts and were better positioned to maintain those payouts. Mm-hmm. But the yield numbers that we're talking about today already incorporate those distribution cuts that were made or announced in the April timeframe. So there were a number of cuts back with the first quarter distributions. For the second quarter distributions, out of 42 dividend-paying companies in the universe, including MLPs and corporations, there was only one cut by a small MLP. So there has been steady payouts from the most recent quarter, and our expectation is that the larger names in the space are going to continue to be well-positioned to afford their distributions, and the smaller names that cut are certainly now better able to afford their distributions. So we think distributions are in a better place overall. But the yields for the space remain really high, and that's, I think, more a reflection of the equity volatility that we've seen. It's interesting because we've seen interest rates come down. A lot of other yield-oriented investments are trading or offering yields below their historical averages, and yet the MLP space is offering yields higher than normal, and valuations are discounted relative to history, whereas other sectors of the market are trading near all-time highs or at premium valuations. So the MLP space is a unique opportunity in the sense that you have quality companies with fee-based cash flows paying out attractive yields, but their equity prices have just been kind of beat up this year and kind of in the past, and that's created these elevated yields that we see today.
Got it. Well, Stacey, you've been watching MLPs for so long, and I know you can't give investing advice, but given the environment that we're in right now, if I was your brother and I said, Stacey, I'm thinking about getting MLPs, do you think this is a good time to be investing? You know, historically, since you've been looking at these, do you think the environment is a good place to put money into MLPs compared to other or previous times?
Yeah, so I think where we are today for MLPs, there's been a lot of changes over the last several years that we haven't gotten into, but the space as a whole has made a lot of improvements over the last several years, as there have been a number of headwinds in terms of kind of the macro energy environment. And where we are today, I think the MLPs are getting closer to a point where they can really generate meaningful free cash flow going forward. These companies have facilitated this huge growth in U.S. oil and natural gas production, spent a lot of money investing in projects to facilitate that growth. And now they're getting to the point where growth capital spending is moderating, and they're in a position to kind of reap the cash flows from these assets that were built over time while spending less money than they did in the past. Now that in the near term, U.S. production is moderating and potentially declining until we see an improvement in oil and natural gas prices. But the space overall, I think going forward, can generate meaningful free cash flow. And I think that's an interesting differentiator from where we've been in the past, when the space has always been spending a lot of money to facilitate production growth and build new pipelines and build new projects, to now moving towards being selective with projects, generating solid returns from those projects and reaping the benefits of free cash flow. So from that perspective, and the fact that, there's discounted valuations, yields are elevated, I think it's an interesting time to be looking at this space, particularly if you're looking for income, which has just become more and more scarce in this market.
Stacey, this has been really fun. It's excellent introduction to MLPs, a new asset class, and also Alarion and a bit of your background. Thanks for joining us. I know the listeners will be really pleased for us to cover this episode off the heels of the Bill Perkins episode that we released a couple weeks ago. Before we break, is there anything else you wanted to leave the listeners with about Alarion or any other type of material that we should material or insights that we should leave the listeners with?
Yeah, I mean, I think we covered quite a bit of ground. If you have any additional questions on the midstream energy infrastructure space, I would just encourage you to check out our website, alarion.com. As I mentioned, we have primers on MLP and energy infrastructure investing, and then we have research pieces that are put out twice a week and provide updates on the space and other information to really just help make MLP investing easier and simpler, despite, you know, some of the nuances that come with it. So if you're interested in the space, you know, I'd encourage you to check out our website to learn more. And you can reach out to us at Alarion, and we can try to help as well if there are specific questions or, you know, looking for certain resources. But you certainly appreciate the time, Sam, and the conversation, and hope this was helpful.
Absolutely. Listeners, check out the links in the show notes. And Stacey, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
Hey, bosses, it's Derek. First of all, thank you to Stacey Morris for coming on the show. Stacey wanted me to mention that she is not a professional tax advisor, and any research you want to do before investing in an MLP, she definitely suggests consulting your own tax advisor. And with that said, I'm going to go over some of the MLPs that Stacey had actually mentioned in the interview. And full disclosure, I do not own any of these assets that I'm about to talk about. And as far as I know, Sam and Johnny do not either. So first up, let's talk about Alarion's ETF. It's AMLP. That's ticker symbol AMLP. Currently, it is paying about a 14.8% dividend. Not too bad. We know that's the whole reason for getting in the MLP space is for these fat dividends. The actual average dividend for an MLP is just over 9%. AMLP is currently trading around $23 a share. Its 52-week low is about $12 a share. 52-week high is about $48 per share. You'll see a trend here. If you're not following the energy sector, it is definitely lagging across the board. So those numbers are actually pretty average. If you bought that stock MLP a year ago, you would have lost about 46%. It's pretty crazy. And if you had purchased it about 5 years ago, you'd still be down about 14%. But remember, you got that higher dividend. So let's talk about individual MLPs. One that Stacey had mentioned is Energy Transfer. That's ticker symbol ET, like the alien. Currently trading just over $6 a share, about $6.29 as of recording this. 52-week high is 14, and 52-week low is about $3.75. Current price to earnings ratio is about 12.3 times earnings. Now, from the research I found, that's not particularly a great stat when it comes to picking MLPs as it is to individual stocks. It seems that the cash flow per share might help you decide in picking a MLP a little bit better. It's similar to the PE, that the lower that it is, it seems to be the better value. Currently, ET, as I just talked about, is trading at about a 3 times cash flow per share. And if you had bought that 1 year ago, you'd be down about 53%. If you bought it 5 years ago, listen to this, you'd be down 76% market value. But again, we got those high dividends. ET currently giving about a 19% annual yield on the dividend. Energy Transfer is about a $17 billion market cap company. Now, next up, Magellan Midstream Partners, ticker symbol MMP. This one's a little bit smaller. It's about $8.6 billion on market cap. Currently trading around $38 per share. 52-week high, about $67, and 52-week low, $22. So it's kind of right in the middle. Now, this pays a dividend a little bit lower, but still very nice, of 10.8%. Had you bought it 1 year ago, once again, same story, down about 42%. If you bought it 5 years ago, you'd be down roughly the same, another 42%. Price to earnings ratio, like we said, maybe doesn't matter as much as an individual stock, but it's about 8.6 times right now. Cash flow per share, as I mentioned, remember the last one, ET, was about 3 times. This one, 5.9. So maybe not as great of a value in MMP. Lastly, let's talk about Enterprise Products Partners. That's ticker symbol EPD. This is a big, big company that you probably never even heard of, but they have long-term contracts with a lot of oil and natural gas producers. $38.4 billion market cap, currently trading around $17 per share. 52-week high is about $30 per share. 52-week low, just over $10 per share. Had you bought EPD 1 year ago, you'd be down about 36%. If you bought it 5 years ago, about the same again, down 36%. This one pays another nice dividend, 10.1% annual yield, and price to earnings about 8.6 times. Cash flow per share, about the same as that first one we had talked about, ET, 2.95 times. So this one may be one worth definitely checking out. That's EPD. With that, I'll send it back to Sam and Johnny for the outro to the show and their thoughts on investing in MLPs.
Thanks, Derek, for all that information. It kind of honestly went a little bit over my head. It was a lot of numbers, a lot of ticker symbols. Sam, are you more or less confused about MLPs now after hearing from Stacy and Derek than before?
Yeah, I'm less confused. Also, just through a little bit of research of my own, I'm more confused actually just about energy. Like I've had such random experiences with sector funds in general, but energy and just like all the dynamics of energy. And you go back to the Bill Perkins episode and you hear him kind of fumbling all these different pieces. And you're like, if you get those pieces right, you can make a lot of money. But if you don't understand those pieces or you get them wrong, like you can have horrible losses. And this is my experience in energy. Like when I had my UBS account, they put me in some MLPs for the tax efficiency and I gave them full discretion over my account. So for anyone that's not aware, like usually when you get an account with a managed account with a broker or a bank like UBS or Morgan Stanley, whoever, it's usually a discretionary account by default. So it means they would have to come to you and you would have to give them discretion over like what trades they make. So you would have to sign off on every trade they make. I'm like, this is ridiculous. You know, I'm in Thailand and they're sending me paperwork to sign so they can buy like one stock. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, that's why I heard you guys. So I said, I want you guys to have full discretion and I'll like, I trust you. You're the experts.
Sounds like a terrible idea. Just to let you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is definitely, you know, a cautionary tale for all the listeners. I gave them full discretion over the account. And what they did was they bet heavily on energy. They bet really heavily on energy because they're supposed to be kind of the energy gurus. Mm-hmm. And this is when the S&P was clicking up kind of at like 10% a year, is year 2013 to 2015. They bet on energy. Why? Because the world is, you know, everything's driven by energy, right? It's an easy sell. And they went into all these energy stocks, including MLPs. And energy took a massive downturn. And you can see this downturn actually in some of the indexes right now. And they sold energy basically at the bottom or a relative bottom, which is like the number one thing that advisors are not supposed to do, right? Mm-hmm. Sell something at the bottom. But they sold everything at the bottom. And I took a really like if I had just been in S&P 500 index fund, I would have been up 30% on my balance, which would have been a lot of money. But during that same time, I actually lost money over the same 2.5-3 year period. And most of it was because of energy, because they sold stuff at the bottom.
So if they didn't sell, would those funds have recovered or would they have continued paying like a high dividend? Would you be much better off?
I stopped actually tracking a lot of the funds that I was in. I could probably go back and figure out what funds I was in and how they did. But when they sold at the bottom, I saw... I checked in my account and I realized that they had realized some losses and that my account wasn't going to rebound while everything was already on a tear up. And that's when I called. I said, you know, what the fuck is this, guys? Yeah. Like you've been giving me all this mumbo jumbo over the last couple of years. And like, here's what I found to be the truth. You guys sold all this energy at the bottom and took a loss. And that's when I decided to fold my account. Actually, that's when we decided to start this podcast, because I was like, I can't get pushed around like this and manipulated my whole life by not understanding what these investments are. So that was my last experience with MLPs and energy as a whole.
I guess some good came out of it, but it sucks that you had that bad experience, because it was probably, you know, a considerable amount of money, right?
It was a lot of money. And the even more damning part of that whole experience was that because I was receiving a lot of dividends, not just from the MLP, but from the energy stocks as a whole, I was receiving a lot of dividends, and I was paying a lot of tax each year on those dividends, but I was still losing money on a share price.
Wow. Right? So,
it was like a double.
That's a double whammy. And we're not talking about like a 95 Honda Civic kind of money, right? Like, this is.
Yeah, I think I calculated it, like, the opportunity loss of just being the S&P 500 plus like the money I lost was like, it was well over $1 million.
Wow. That's Bugatti Veyron money, buddy.
That's Bugatti, gold Bugatti.
Oh, man.
Not, maybe not a gold Bugatti.
Just a Bugatti. We can wrap it.
Teal blue.
I know a guy. But,
okay. You know, we need to make that iLab rap, the anthem, the iLab anthem.
You know, if somebody wants to do that, please send it in. We would love to add it to our outro.
That's right.
Sam could have had a Bugatti, but instead he got naughty.
Energy naughty. No, his visor sold energy at the bottom. That's naughty.
Oh. Well, Sam, I'm curious, has your views on MLPs changed since? Because it seems like a good time to buy right now, that they're all pretty cheap, but they're paying crazy high dividends at, you know, 10, 12, 16% plus. What are your thoughts?
It's not for me. I think it's an interesting asset class if you understand it. But I think for the layman, you're playing with fire. Mm-hmm. I posted this recently in the Patreon group and also in Boss Lounge about the other place that I haven't made money, and it's another sector stock. So I've clearly lost quite a bit of money, and healthcare. Mm. Healthcare is the one index fund that I own in Vanguard that hasn't made money over the last 5 years. And you would think over the last 5 years, healthcare would have done really well, right? Especially in these times of COVID. I'm not making money in that. So I think you have to be really careful with healthcare. I'm sorry, with sector funds. You have to really understand the assets underneath. You have to understand the companies underneath. You can't just make a bet on, say, energy is the future. Let's buy an energy index or an MLP. Or healthcare is, everything's going to be healthcare and science going forward. Let's buy a healthcare fund. To really understand those things, that's not just like placing a bet on the S&P 500 or Vanguard small cap. Like, that, as long as the economy's going, those are going to go up. So yeah, I don't know. It's not for me. Even chasing the big dividend, it's attractive, especially if it's tax deferred and really tax efficient. It's not something I'm going to get back into. How about you, Johnny?
You know what? I like going against the Sam. I'm a betting man.
Yeah.
And I looked into it and I had no idea how to invest. What, you know, it's confusing. It's complicated, as you mentioned. So, but the number one thing that I've learned that has made me a lot of money is to basically follow the bets of people who do know what they're talking about. So Bill Perkins seems like he's a pretty smart guy, and he seems like he likes MLPs, and he thinks they're continuing to pay out. So I wanted to follow his bet, but I mean, around that episode, and he never mentioned which ones he invested in. Right. And at the time I had never heard of MLP, so I didn't even know to ask what the ticker symbol was. Stupid me. So I tweeted at him. Hopefully he'll get back. But, you know, if anyone knows Bill Perkins out there, or, you know, can hit him up on Twitter, let us know what he invests in. Cause I would happily throw 10 grand at it just as kind of follow along trade. I definitely wouldn't put more than, you know, 10% of my net worth in it, because it's risky and something I don't understand. But the fact is, everything is so expensive right now that I don't know where to park my money. So I have 100K sitting in a was Marcus' account making 0.8%.
Less than one now, right? Yeah.
Which I actually got locked out of. Luckily, I was able to open back up, but it's sitting there not doing anything.
Damn. Yeah, because it's a good point. Like investing in a MLP is different than investing in MLPs, right? Like, because he might know one that he really knows that company well and what they're doing and how they're generating cash, because he's an energy guy.
Yeah.
But broadly, he might not like MLPs, might just like one. So definitely we got to get that ticker.
Yeah. Tweet at BP, what was it? I don't know what it was. But whatever guy is. not British Petroleum. BP, you can know. It was like, I can pull it up. BP22. And you can add me too, Johnny FDK.
You know, Bill Perkins would be a great guy to do a cameo in our iLab anthem.
Oh, yes. We need to write him some lyrics.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. Somebody write us some lyrics to this rap song, and we're going to get Bill Perkins on as a cameo with Sam and I rapping on the background.
Now that would be fun. That would be fun.
Yeah. I got that super yacht Bill. Die with zero. Come, I don't know. I can't rap.
I'm the MLP hero.
Oh, good job, Sam.
Yeah, we compliment
good save.
Each other.
Like we do. Bang. We really do. So bang, I bang. Wish, guys, if I had known the ticker symbol, I would have dropped 10K today, maybe even a bit more. So that's my official stance with the MLPs. But it is one of those things where I just don't know enough about it to make an informed decision. So I'm going to have to sit out on this one for now.
Okay, so Johnny's basically out, but he's sort of in if he gets the ticker symbol. I'll be interested to hear what everyone else is doing, if they're in MLPs, if they thought about them before, and if they're planning on making an investment after this. So let's get a poll going in Boss Lounge, and we'll also queue up Patreon to see what they're doing, and we'll share this information, because it's great to discover new asset classes that we haven't been talking about. And I loved hearing the pros and cons from Stacy, one of the leading experts in MLPs and MLP research, and also about her company, Alarion, who's equally the same on a corporate level.
Yeah, 100%. So it's been super fun. The Patreon group is blowing up, guys. We just got 5 new ones, I think, just this week. So we have Edward, James, Kiki, Charles, and one more that's not showing up right now, but welcome to the Patreon. Thank you for supporting the show. This show is possible because of the Patreons. If it wasn't for you guys, we wouldn't have Derek, and also we wouldn't be making 3+ episodes a month. We would probably just be making one. So big thanks to all of you.
And thanks for all the 5-star reviews on iTunes. I think we're at 392. So last episode we recorded, we were like 380. So we're getting a lot of 5-star reviews. We really appreciate it, guys. Once we get over 400, then we'll ask you to get us to 500, but 400 still is a great milestone. And we appreciate all the support, and glad to know that it's adding a lot of value to all your personal finances. And hopefully it's a little bit entertaining as well.
Yeah, definitely. Especially following your sorrow, Sam. I hate to say it, but it was 155 episodes in. It seems like there are still more losses that we haven't heard about yet, which is insane.
It's almost impossible, like, to not have losses if you're in as many as investments as I am, I think. I think the losses I can stomach, you know. Mm-hmm. They always say it's hard to make money. It's even harder to keep it, right? Because mm-hmm. you make investments and people got their hand in your pockets and you make mistakes, but I think it's more just the complications of having your, like we were talking about this before the episode, having your hands in too many pies, mm-hmm. and having too many things, which I think is really prevalent in Western cultures, where you buy things and those things end up owning you, right?
Yeah.
Buy a golf cart. You got to service that car. You got to clean it. You got to put gas in it. You got to maintenance it. Like, and that's just one thing. You have 2 cars, a couple of motorcycles, a couple of houses. Like, you become an administrative assistant for your for your holdings, right? So there's definitely a lesson being learned here on the fly by me, by just like the growth phase and the accumulation phase is, it's taxing. Yeah, so
yeah, I can definitely see that
to come.
Well, hopefully it's going to be all green grass and blue ceiling, like on this, my super yacht going forth, but we'll see. I just realized that at least on the new versions of Mac OS, the podcast is no longer on iTunes. It is now on a separate Apple Podcasts app, even on your computer. So go there and give us a 5-star rating, and we would love to hear from you. I actually can't figure out how to do it. So hopefully, it looks like I can pull the show. I can see the ratings. I can see that it has, you know, hundreds of 5-star ratings, but it doesn't look like there's anywhere for me to even, it looks like it has 392 ratings, but it doesn't look like, I don't see where I can even leave a rating. This is insane.
What's this mean for podcasts?
Oh, you know what? On Apple? Okay. This is how you do it, guys. You got to scroll all the way to the bottom and then you click on ratings and reviews. It's not on top. So on top, you can see it has, you know, we're rated 5.0 stars, 392 ratings. Very nice. But you have to scroll all the way down past, you know, hundreds of episodes. Look under ratings and reviews, click on see all, then you can click it 5 stars and you can write a review.
That should be front and center, not at the bottom. It's so important to the quality. Of course, if we were 3 stars, I wouldn't be saying this, but
I know it's insane. But while I'm here, thank you to Sudis 2020. He says, "I must subscribe for investors of all ages, especially young investors. I've been listening to these guys for several months now. I like Sam and Johnny because they are relatable with topics they discuss and bringing in appropriate and interesting guests. Thank you so much." Oh, wow. This is actually a really long. To read the rest, you have to click read more or more. And it's like 8 paragraphs long.
Great.
So
super nice.
Thank you so much for that.
Yeah.
And... he said that he found us by searching for 5-star rated investment podcasts, and iLab was one of many, but he had his own process of elimination where he found the iLab podcast as number one amongst the 5 that he listens to. So guys, thank you so much. I hope you continue to love this podcast and find the podcast app on your iPhone, your iPad, or your MacBook, and give us a rating.
I love it. And if anyone that's out there that's interested in sailing, I'm going to go to Mexico the last week of September, first week of October. I'm going to do 7 days of learning how to sail.
Ooh.
I think you get three certifications in 7 days. And I believe there's enough room for 6 other people because right now I'm the only one signed up. Mm-hmm. So if anyone's interested in checking that out, you can go to sailsancarlos.com. It's in Mexico on the West Coast. Leave your COVID at home, please.
Yeah.
I'll put some Boston.
Yeah.
But if you want to talk about investing and learn how to sail, I'll be there.
All right. Love it, buddy. Guys, thank you for listening. Thanks for the reviews. And we'll see you all next week. Bye for now.
Adios.
Thanks for listening to the Invest Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.